Hello and good day, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Magic the First Pioneers podcast. This is a podcast all about the Pioneer MTG format, where we keep our listeners up to date with what is new, interesting, and powerful in the world of Pioneer. I'm Kevin Finkel, one of your hosts. I'm joined by my other co-host here, as well as a special guest.
Hello, everybody. It's Ryan coming at you from Japan. And our special guest today is...
Harry 13, your go-to Pioneer grinder.
Yeah, definitely the person we have on whenever we really want some good insight on what's going on in the deep competitive world of Pioneer, which is something we always like to look at. We like to, you know, we're not the heaviest spikes, myself and Ryan, but we always like to make sure that we know what's going on in competitive Pioneer and that we're there to keep you guys updated. So let me give a quick preface. You know, we met last week, the three of us, and we did a nice long, you know, hour-long recording talking all about a topic I'm really interested in, and then our audio did not record well. So if you guys are following us on Twitter, hopefully you are, you saw that we had some technical difficulties. We are going to be re-recording that episode right here, right now. We already know what we're going to say, so we're just going to, like, power through this speed run 20-minute episode. Is that right?
Yeah, sounds good. Yeah,
we'll try
I'm
to
sure
contain
that things
our...
have even changed just from last week, but yeah, this will be a little bit awkward for us because we're going to be kind of, you know, having the same conversations hopefully that we had last week. I thought that was a very insightful episode that all of you may never hear because the audio was shot. So yeah. How are you guys doing first?
Hey, better. Yeah, I'm good.
Yeah, not bad, not bad. Kind of frustrated about the audio, well, the output issues I had last time, I guess.
Well, hopefully we got some new content for you. Yeah, I think we can add a little bit more to what we were talking about last time, so it's not a total loss.
Yeah, I also changed my list by quite a lot since last time. Like, I made a lot of changes more relevant to the current metagame in Pioneer, so it's not, it will be completely the same as last time, but it'll be very similar. So
okay, well, why don't we start off with that? You know, you had sent us your list last week. I've got it saved in the decklist channel of our Discord, another great place you guys should be following, hint hint hint. Do you want to quick send us your recent changes? I will make sure that that's available for our listeners and that we can follow along.
Yeah, sure. I thought I was going to send it. Maybe I just forgot. Yeah, I've got it here, which I can send just now. So there we go. So it should be available in the deck lists section of the Discord channel.
We'll check that out.
Yeah, I've made some changes based on the current metagame. The changes are quite significant from last time, actually. I basically seen Jabberwocky had updated his list, and it was, again, quite different to what it was before, and I actually quite like what he's trying to do with the new list. I changed his list some more, because he had some cards in there which I didn't think were as good as other options that I put in the list instead. So, yeah.
Okay, let's quick take a step back, because I don't know if I actually gave our listeners a full description of why exactly we wanted to have you here, which is that this is... You are one of the foremost masters online of playing the Sultai Reclamation deck. So that's really the deep dive deck that we wanted to look at this week. We want to go through the deck, look at what some of the card choices are, look at what some of the matchup choices are, look at where it fits in the meta, which, you know, right now is pretty much right at the top of it as far as most played decks, and really get some of your perspective on what makes it such a powerful deck, what makes it good in the format, etc. You know, really update our listeners for anyone who's not in the know about exactly what's so great about this deck. And if you are in the know, hopefully you'll learn a thing or two.
So before we jump into the deck choices, we kind of want to talk a little bit more about the deck then, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I think I asked this last time, and I'll just ask it again. So, yeah, just give us a quick rundown on Sultai Reclamation. How does it win? You know, what is, like, the theme of the deck? You know, what kind of deck is it, etc.?
Okay. So Sultai Reclamation is basically like a... it's I would describe it as like a tempo control deck. So in the early game, you're playing cards like Fatal Push, Sensors, Negates, Sinister Sabotage, you know, like counter spells, some efficient removal spells to deal with opponent's threats or counter relevant targets. And then you play Wilderness Reclamation, which kind of allows you to play a more tempo game where you can start playing your powerful proactive plays like Uro, or you can use it to make big sharks, or you also use cards like Class's Intervention, so you can basically, you know, find relevant cards in your deck to the cards, the tools you need to take over the game. You also it also allows you to use like Shark Typhoon as an enchantment, so you can start taking over the game then by just flooding the board with a bunch of powerful creatures and gaining value that way. So yeah, it's just basically a deck that takes advantage of the power of Uro, Wilderness Reclamation, and Shark Typhoon. Three very powerful spells, are very powerful cards in Magic right now, especially in Pioneer. And then you basically build around those three cards with a bunch of King of the Bee cantrips, or you know, removal spells, counter spells. You can build to be slightly more controlling. You can build it to be, you know, more of a ramp strategy with more powerful top end cards. It's very customizable as well for the metagame. I think black tends to have access to like the best removal spells in Pioneer, and then blue green is obviously Uro. Yeah, it gives you access to Uro and you know, control magic and powerful cards like Shark Typhoon. So yeah, I've been playing this strategy for a while, and I'm a big fan of it. I've had quite a lot of success with it in challenges, etc. Over the course of, I think, 2-3 months now, and I'm gonna keep playing it until Kaladin comes out, and you know, if there's any changes to the format because of that. Yeah, I really like the strategy a lot.
So just real quick, I want to kind of connect this to you know, early times of Pioneer. You were a blue black player before, right?
Yeah, I played a lot of Inverter, and I played a lot of I played some blue black control as well.
So would you say this is kind of like the not the evolution, but kind of like the path that many of those players took after Inverter was banned?
Yeah, I guess so. Like, basically, this deck basically came out of the blue-black control deck that was being played for a while. Like, a lot of the control players, like Waffle Tappa, were playing a blue-black control strategy, and it was quite good. However, it just felt like a lot of the decks could go over the top of you and ramp over you, and basically decided, is Dig Through Time better than playing Uro and Wilderness Reclamation? And then decided that no, it wasn't, because Wilderness Reclamation and Uro allow you to turn the corner fast against aggressive strategies. I think the blue-black deck kind of had a, difficult time dealing with like Lurus Barn or even Orsha of Aura sometimes. And this deck just allowed you to switch gears fast enough that you could beat those strategies. So
okay, so it is kind of an evolution then.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, it's good to know. All right, so yeah, we talked about the kind of like the basics. Let's move into your deck list. So you posted it, like you said, in the deck list area. Anybody can check it out later. So let's just kind of go over all your choices right now. Why do you play this card? Why do you play that card? And then maybe afterwards we can talk about some other possible cards you could switch in their position.
Yeah, so we'll start with kind of the core cards here. We want to go over those, and then let's move over to like what some of the, you know, this fills this role, this fills this role. So kind of core cards, I mean, I would think it seems obvious, Wilderness Reclamation.
Yep, so core cards in this are always going to be Shark Typhoons, Wilderness Reclamation, and Uro. They're like the spine of your deck. They're the cards you're building around. You can pivot on the number. You tend to always stick with 4 Shark Typhoon. You can pivot on the number of Uro and Wilderness Reclamation. Some people only play 2 Wilderness Reclamation. I would personally recommend playing 3 minimum. I think the card is super important in a lot against a lot of the aggressive strategies. And I think you need 3 to really get the value out of your X mana cards, like Thassa's Intervention and stuff like that, if you want to play them. I'm also playing a copy of Pool from Tomorrow. But other cards, obviously, Uro, Titan of Nature's Wrath. Normally, the default is 3. Given the metagame right now is slightly more aggressive, I would recommend playing 4 just to guarantee the game 1. Well, not guarantee, but maximize your chances of having Uro in the early game, early to mid game in game 1. Because I think casting an Uro against aggressive strategies makes a big difference. Yeah, so they're like the absolute spine of the deck. I would also say that 2 copies of Fatal Push is like the core cards in Sultai Reclamation. I'm playing 3 just now again, given the meta game at the moment. But yeah, I would say like
here. So let's break those up a little bit. So direct removal spell. So 1-for-1 removal spell. You're currently running. Let me see here. So 2 fatal or 2 or 3 fatal push.
3 fatal push at the moment.
Yeah.
3 fatal push. 1 abrupt decay. Those are really the direct targeted removal spells you've got.
Yeah.
So just quick on those numbers. Yeah, so I know, like, you know, when we looked last week, I think it was 2 fatal push, a heartless act, and an abrupt decay.
Yep.
So I guess the more fatal push when you're in a more aggressive meta is the assumption?
Yeah, basically, yeah. You just want to... If mono green planeswalkers is getting played a lot, I recommend playing, like, 3 copies of push minimum. They just have some really explosive draws, and having... You know, having more chance of having Fatal Push in your opener is always a good thing. If you feel like your opponents are going to play like Soul Scar Mage or Elf turn 1, you know, it's always nice to answer them turn 1. So that's why I'm playing 3 Fatal Push at the moment. There's not too many threats that Fatal Push can't take down with a Revolt trigger at the moment. So that's why I'm playing the 3rd push over Heartless Act.
Sounds good.
Yeah, I've also elected to play a single copy of Extinction Event in the main. Again, just given the way the metagame is right now, I'm quite happy to have access to that in the main deck.
So real quick, touch on us for Extinction Event versus playing Shadow's Verdict. So that's the 5 mana one that's anything 3 or less, exiles, and also exiles from the graveyard, whereas Extinction Event is even or odd, but it exiles. But it's only 4 mana.
Yeah, so playing Extinction Event, basically mono red has like pretty much all 1 mana creatures and then like Bonecrusher Giant, so I quite like it there. It's also faster to come down than Shadow's Verdict, some mana cheaper, and it doesn't have that Nombo effect of Uro being in your graveyard. Shadow's Verdict main was basically played because of Upsol spells. Like, Shadow's Verdict can incidentally pretty much win you the game if they go for the combo and you cast it afterwards, because it exiles all the relevant creatures apart from maybe one. What's it called? The
Haunted Dead.
Haunted Dead, yeah, apart from the one copy of Haunted Dead, but that's not going to cause too much problems. You normally are still on like 7-8 life after Creeping Chill, so I don't see it as a big issue. Upsol spells isn't being played as much at the moment. It's on the down. You know, I could regret that decision. Maybe people will think no one's playing this deck or no one's expecting it, so let's play it this weekend. But I'm just hedging towards the current metagame. Could easily see people deciding to play Shadow's Verdict over Extinction Event if they're worried about Upsol spells. Like, maybe you play 2 Shadow's Verdict in place of like the 4th Uro and the Extinction Event main. Maybe.
And I think this is great information, is, you know, the deck does sound like it's a little bit customizable, and that's why I'm kind of trying to break out these specific role fillers, is that you've got 1 to 2 sweeper spots, you've got, you know, about 4 direct removal spots, and where which cards are best in there sounds like it's not just a cut and dry answered, the deck's not solved, it's going to depend on what your meta looks like.
Yeah, and it tends to be the case, and, you know, this is a reactive strategy at the end of the day, so you always need to sharpen your blades accordingly. You know, you need to think what decks are you expecting and how can you put yourself in the best position to beat them. So this might not be my final list for the weekend for the showcase qualifier on MTGO, but it's pretty close to what I'm expecting to play. And yeah, you always have to be thinking towards the next weekend and what you expect to show up, what's doing well, you know, what decks are level 1 and what decks will people maybe bring in to try and beat the number 1 decks at the moment. So yeah, I think my configuration right now is one I'm pretty happy with. I played a couple of leagues tonight on stream. I went, I think I went 8-2. So I'm pretty happy. Yeah, I'm pretty happy with that. Like, if you're getting like 4-1s, you know, regularly, then you're on to a good strategy, you know. So yeah, I was pretty happy with those numbers after I took the list out for a spin.
That sounds great.
Should we talk about like the counterspell package real quick?
Yeah, that was where I was going to go next. Is let's talk about the kind of the hard counter package, because you know, Censor, I think we're going to talk a little bit separately since it mostly plays a role of a cantrip. But so hard counters, Sinister Sabotage is the one that I see in your list, and I think that's the one I see most frequently. And then I also usually see Negate in some amount. And again, here you're on like 5 to 6 of these. The list we looked at last week was 2 Negate, 4 Sinister Sabotage. This week it's 2 and 3, respectively.
Well, and we have Thassa's Intervention, but we can kind of talk about that in a little bit more detail later, I think. So, yeah, what are we going to be countering with these? How are you going to be using these cards?
So, Negates, I guess, like, these cards, like, Sabotage is just generally a decent counterspell to have access to. You're probably using it for countering Planeswalkers predominantly, like, if you're against mono green, then you're probably going to counter any of the Planeswalkers. Sometimes you choose not to counter Vivian, depending if you can, like, so for example, say their board is relatively empty or they have like one creature, I don't know, like a Llanowar Elf, and you can make a shark that can kill Vivian in 2 turns. Then there's times where you choose, let's say you have like 5 mana, yeah, there's times where you choose not to counter the Vivian and just bring the shark down and try and kill over 2 turns and kill the Llanowar Elf with a removal spell. But most of the time, yeah, like cards like Nissa Who Shakes the World, Karn the Great Creator, stuff like that. If you're playing against the mirror, normally it's like Wilderness Reclamation, Shark Typhoon Enchantments, maybe an Uro that's escaped, depending on
the fairies, I assume, are also
like
big target.
Teferi Time Raveler is like the number one. Teferi Time Raveler, Escape to the Wilds, Genesis Ultimatum, Ugin, you know, those are the cards that you're looking to counter. Fae Wishes, granted. So yeah, those cards. I don't want to play too many because against the aggressive decks, Sinister Sabotage almost always trades down a mana, and it's just it's a bit clunky at times. Negates are basically there as a more efficient way to answer, you know, those cards I was talking about. The Planeswalkers, Wilderness Reclamation, the Shark Typhoon Enchantment. Mm-hmm. So you want to keep your opponents honest. Like, you want to have access to counter spells where whatever may come up, you know. But this deck's a little bit more proactive in the sense that you're playing cards like Growth Spiral, trying to be a little bit more aggressive into landing Wilderness Reclamation and stuff like that.
So, looking at other options that you could have been playing in this place, you know, for the 3-mana slot, I think the other one that I've seen sometimes is like Void Shatter. That's the 3-mana counterspell that exiles instead of getting that Surveil.
Yeah.
How confident are you that you prefer the Surveil here, that it's all of those? Or
Pretty confident. The Surveil's very important. Like, you need it to, like, your deck's very mana hungry. Like, you want to basically, you have lot of mana sinks. You need to make sure you hit your land drops 1 to 5 at least. You also, it gives you the option to provide more fuel to escape Uro from the graveyard. Surveil 1's a great addition to the card. It makes a big difference. Void Shatter's obviously nice because it can exile, which is not irrelevant, and it's colorless technically, so it doesn't get done by Mystical Disputes. But I think this deck can outgrow a Mystical Dispute quite well, given how many lands it plays and Growth Spirals and stuff, and I think other decks are similar. I actually don't really like Mystical Dispute a lot right now in the format, to be honest. It becomes...
That was what I was going to ask about next, actually, because, you know, I used to see the occasional Mystical Dispute main deck in some of these kind of lists, and definitely not seeing that here.
Yeah, I'm not a huge fan. Teferi Time Raveler is on the downswing at the moment. I'd rather be proactive with cards like Thoughtseize than cards like Mystical Dispute, to be honest. Because people were playing Thought Distortion and stuff as well. Gaz playing 2 copies of Thought Distortion in my previous build, and I've seen a lot of people decide to make that their default sideboard plan against the mirror. So I actually would rather have more proactive cards like Thoughtseize than more counter magic, so to speak.
Okay. Makes sense. Yeah, any other ones you've looked at as far as counter spells, like Disdainful Stroke, or I don't know what else is even played at the 2-mana slot. There's really not a lot.
Yeah, no, there's cards like, you know, you can always think, oh, should I play like Essence Scatter or something like that, but it's not... You tend to care less about trying to... There's very few must-counter creatures in the format. It's not like... I don't even know like what creatures would be must... counter
True Name Nemesis or something.
Yeah, like True Name Nemesis, there's nothing really that you can't answer, because like most of the creatures are very small, and you know it's a lot of prowess creatures for one mana, so oftentimes with the creatures you're kind of trading down in mana. Uro doesn't come back straight away, and you know you don't see Uro escaped until the mid to late game, so you normally have answers for it by then. So I like the 2-2 split between Censor and Negate, personally.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Oh, so yeah, that's the other place we can go real quick, is Censor. So that's partially a cantrip. You know, it cycles for one mana, so it's often just a, you know, you want to put a card in your graveyard, you want to draw a card. But it does also, you know, it slows down your opponent and can get real. You know, it just makes things difficult for your opponent, or it can, you know, counter a spell for 2 mana. So this version, you are playing 2 of them. I think that when we talked last week, you were still on 4. And you want to touch on that real quick?
Yeah, basically, Censor, a lot of the decks in the format are quite equipped to play around Censor. Like, as I said, like Mono Red, Mono Green gets out of Censor range very fast with the amount of mana dorks it plays. And the devotion aspect of the deck means it just is able to generate a ton of mana. Kind of similar with Omnath as well to an extent, although there is a lot of targets on cards that you want to deal with. But cards like Lotus Cobra like resolves on the draw, they can often play around Censor quite easily. You still have decks like Mono Black is starting to make a comeback. So there just seems to be like less targets for the Censor to be effective, and more often than not you just find it being just a cantrip. But and not a good cantrip at that. So it's not. It's still good enough because it's not like it never comes up. But I find that Censor is less effective than maybe in formats where you're wanting to answer, you know, decks like Big Red. I remember when that deck was a thing. Like Censor was very good at dealing with it because it tried to play out on curve. And the Inverter Mirror, there was a lot of relevancy to play Censor as well. You wanted to curve into Jace, etc. But at the moment, I find it has less relevancy in the format.
Is there any way thing in the meta that could happen that you'd be like, oh, I think it's time to go back to 4 Censor? Like if you know Reclamation picked up more, or if... I don't know if any of those other decks are popular that you were talking about.
I guess... Censor's pretty good against decks like, it's quite nice against 5-color Niv. If 5-color Niv was like really, really popular at the moment, which it isn't, then I'd consider playing more, because I think Censor deals with what they're trying to do on curve pretty well. I know they have access to, what, 3 to 4 Caryatids, but on the play, snagging a Caryatid is quite nice, and they play at sorcery speed quite a lot. If Esper Yorion was played quite a lot, then I'd consider it. Mm-hmm. Jeskai Luka was played more. Censor tends to deal with those decks quite well because they don't really have a lot of ways of ramping. They don't have a lot of counter spells, and they try to curve like 3-mana Planeswalker into Fires of Invention into Luka that way. So Censor's pretty nice there. But none of those decks are really seeing a lot of play at the moment. So that's why I'm down to 2.
Okay, I'm going to break up into maybe 3 more sections here, which I'm going to kind of say cantrips, I'm going to say big draw spells, and then maybe I'm going to put like graveyard demanding cards as its kind of separate thing, because I know you've got a kind of a pet card in the main deck that I really liked after you talked about it last week, went out and got a chance to try it out, so we'll talk about that in a second. But next category is really very important to the deck is cantrips. You know, you've got a lot of lands, you want to be seeing cards, drawing cards, milling through your deck to feed some of your graveyard things. what are you running right now? And I think the big question here is Growth Spiral or Opt?
Yeah, it was Opt. Now it's Growth Spiral. I just felt like Opt is nice if you're playing a bunch of mid-range decks. If you're expecting a bunch of mid-range decks and you have time to use Opt to you know, find lands, fill up the graveyard for Uro. But now you just don't really have that time, and I just feel like Opt... the amount of times I mulliganed at the weekend because I just didn't hit more than one land in my openers, it was quite painful for me. And I felt like that was one of the main ways I was losing matchups, was I kept stumbling on land. And maybe I underestimated how truly mana-hungry this deck is. Like I discussed, like I think with the London Mulligan rule, cantrips have been... It's been a lot worse for cantrips because you just need to use them a lot less, given how good you like how good the mulligans available to you are. So I wanted something more explosive to allow me to double spell to get the Wilderness Reclamation down faster, and I feel like Growth Spiral was the one for me. Adding two blast zones to the deck so I could. You know, take advantage of the amount of one mana creatures or permanents players were playing, which would also allow me to, you know, have more chance of carving, playing lands and carving out. Growth Spiral is the one I wanted to use.
Yeah, I think that's a really interesting thing we should probably call out at some point here compared to the prior week. And, you know, I'm going to keep bringing this up because we did have this conversation last week. I know our listeners didn't hear it, but you were running about 25 lands in that list. This week you're running 29.
Yeah. Definitely want to talk about that after we talk about the rest of the cantrips.
Yeah. But as far as where those cards are going, you know, we've been talking about, we're going to slim down on a Fatal Push, we're going to slim down on a Sweeper, we're going to slim down on 1-3 mana Counterspell, and that's kind of where some of these are going over towards. You know, you're on two Censor now. That's another place. So, yeah, 4 Growth Spiral is where you're currently at, and I can see where that's saying you're going to really take the most advantage out of your big cards. You're going to get to the point where a giant Shark Typhoon takes over the game sooner because you're putting a lot of lands in play early, whereas the Opt, especially against something like Red, where there's often one of those nasty Eidolons sitting around, this is a good way to... Okay.
Yeah.
So, we're going
to... Mm-hmm, sorry.
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to continue on with the cantrips. Yeah, so like they're the only real obvious ones. Like playing like 2 Censor, which are often used as cantrips, just to help fuel Uro, cycle. You, given the amount of lands you have, you're less, most of the time you're using your cantrips to find lands. And given the way that this is set up, you're less pressurized to find lands. You'll tend to have openers that have like 4 lands, 3 spells, or 5 lands, 2 spells. Growth Spiral is just there to basically bridge the gap, you know, take advantage of how many lands you're playing in the deck. Censor's there just for the odd chance that you might be able to counter something with it. Shark Typhoon can also be considered a cantrip, depending, like, I cycle Shark Typhoon for 0/0 Shark a lot of the time. And also, for listeners, if you cycle Shark Typhoon for 0, that triggers Revolt. You still technically make the 0/0 Shark. It technically comes into the battlefield and dies immediately, but that still allows you to Fatal Push. So don't forget that, because that will come up a surprising amount of times. So
that's very cool.
Yeah, I had to do it because I pulled for tomorrow for 5, where X was 5, and my opponent responded with an Ocean Thief. And then I had to cycle Shark Typhoon for 0 and then Fatal Push it on the stack so I could still draw my 5 cards.
Nice.
I still lost anyway, but that's not the point.
it's about sending a message.
Yeah, exactly.
I wanted to talk about those real quick, you know, if you don't mind talking about why you're playing one pull from tomorrow and the Thassa's Intervention. We talked about it, I think, last week, like why you're playing this over like Dig Through Time or something like that. So can you just quickly touch on why you're playing Pull from Tomorrow and the Thassa's Intervention?
So Pull from Tomorrow is still a test card to an extent, but I've been pretty impressed with it so far. Because I upped to 4 Uro, in playing two Castle Vantress, I feel like a lot of matchups is about card quality rather than quantity. So Castle Vantress allows you to, because in Mirrors especially, in a lot of decks, you need to worry about decking out, so you need to be quite careful about drawing cards without a purpose, if you know what I mean. Like, just like cycling Sensor for the sake of it, or playing Uro, drawing a card from Shark Typhoon. You need to be careful that you don't start just drawing too much and risking yourself decking out. Pull from Tomorrow was there because against a lot of the decks in the format, you're trading one for one with your removal, but there's a lot of cards at two for one. So Pull from Tomorrow with Wilderness Reclamation is a very nice way of, you know, recharging your hand when you've used up a lot of your counter spells and removal spells, and it's just a more powerful card. I don't really like Chemist's Insight that much, to be honest. Against the more aggressive strategies, it's too clunky, and it's not really what I want, to be honest.
So that one's the 4 mana instant that draws 2 cards, and you can also then flash it back, yeah, discarding a card and paying the mana cost. So I want to touch on something that you said here that I think is a big difference from last week, and I can, you know, maybe I'm putting words in your mouth, but I want to see if this makes sense. You know, last week you were kind of saying that it is about card quantity and not about card quality, because all of the cards in your deck are good, a lot of them can trip to themselves, and you just need so many lands in the deck. Whereas this week you're running 4 more lands in the deck, now it's kind of about sifting through those lands and getting the important cards out of it.
Yeah, basically.
So has that kind of changed depending on how many lands you're running in the deck?
Yeah, I would say so. Like, given the fact you have 29 lands, you want your spells to matter, if you know what I mean. So, obviously, you still have, like, one-for-one removal spells, but you want to have, apart from that, you want your bigger spells to go over the top. And I feel like Pull from Tomorrow and Thassa's Intervention goes over the top better than other cards, given the fact that you have Wilderness Reclamation. Thassa's Intervention basically acts like a dig through time in a lot of sense with Wilderness Reclamation, but it also gives you that extra protection as a kind of pseudo hard counter, depending on how much mana you have available.
And that is kind of the follow-up question is, you know, Dig Through Time seems like an obvious choice. What makes it something that didn't make this list?
Basically, it's just, you're already, for me, I figured that I wanted to play Tassigar as another card that I could potentially use the graveyard with because of its body against a lot of the creatures in the format. And it's a 4 mana ability in combination with Wilderness Reclamation. I didn't really feel like I could support Dig Through Time as well, because the Dig Through Time, I would be predominantly trying to cast most of it as mana as opposed to cards from my graveyard, given I'm playing 4 Uro. And I felt like because of that, I'd rather just use the Thassa's Intervention, because it acts similar to Dig Through Time, where you're probably Thassa's Intervention, where X is 5, 4 to 7. It's not putting pressure on your graveyard, but also it being a counter spell is very relevant. So that's,
yeah, and you can also play Thassa's Intervention at 3 mana to counter some things. That's nice, whereas you can't really do that with Dig early on.
Yeah, exactly. Don't get me wrong.
Okay.
Yep.
Well, yeah, I was just going to say, yeah, we're kind of moving cleanly into the next section, which I was going to talk about. You know, the graveyard is a resource, really important, and that's something that I've seen with different lists. You know, some of them do play that the Dig Through Time. They play, you know, either 3 or 4 Uro is usually what I see, and then often they will play, you know, well, your version's playing Tassigar as an additional delve spell, so really taxing that.
Yeah.
And that is a bit of a pet card, if you want to talk on that.
Yeah, I mean, I tried it out, like, a couple of weeks ago. Like, it's not really, I wouldn't say it's, like, a pet card as such. Like, I just had a look at it, and I felt like I wanted, like, a third win condition in the deck. I wanted something that would synergize well with Wilderness Reclamation, because I felt like you needed to play 3 Wilderness Reclamation minimum instead of 2, so I wanted to take advantage of that. And I just kind of looked at Tassigar and I felt like this card is still very good, and it sees like no play in the format, and I felt like, why not? The card's a solid body against what a lot of the creatures in the format. and it has a really nice ability which allows you to rebuy a lot of your counter spells or other cards potentially from the graveyard, and you just end up drawing like three cards plus off it. And it's more about the removal, right? The majority of removal involves like Fatal Push, Abrupt Decays, Lightning Strikes, etc. Like, there's not really a lot of cards that can remove Tasigur easily. So I felt like it just lined up well with what's available in the format. And
I applaud your choice.
Thanks very much.
Oh, I love it, yeah. And I have gotten a chance to try it out since last week, and I do like Tasigur. Always like Tasigur, but I love the ability that you can play him, you know, on turn 3 or turn 4 with another spell. Or you can play him like a turn 5 Reclamation, play him, and then have 4 mana up to hold up a counter spell or activate his ability. So really cool. Nice way to just buy back some free cards. And the deck loves to get, you know, if you're 1-for-1-ing and you get 1 or 2 extra cards in there, that can be the difference in the game.
Exactly, exactly. Yeah, I'm very happy with my choice to include Tasigur on the list. And I think a lot of players have taken me up on that. Like, I've seen a lot of lists on MTG Goldfish also playing Tasigur, which is quite cool to see that, you know, other people have confidence in my card choices and have went with it as well and had some success.
Any other fun, you know, said you were looking for a third win con. Anything else you were looking at? Like, have you tried Gearhulk?
Gearhulk would be a reasonable choice. However, like, the best cards you're really looking to bring back with that is, like, the counter spells and maybe, like, Fatal Push. I don't think you get a ton of value. I've played Lochmere Serpent in the past, which was good. If you're expecting loads of mirrors constantly, loads of like Sultai mirrors or like 5-color Niv, it was quite good against. Like, matchups where Uro really matters and Lochmere is quite nice. However, it's just the 6-mana body is quite clunky.
I was going to ask, what about Planeswalkers? Have you ever considered anything like Ashiok or anything like that?
Yeah, I've considered in the past, but it's just a lot of the stuff you're trying to do is either fairly mana efficient if it's on your side, if it's your turn, or like you want it to be a flash type spell. That's why you'll tend to see Notion Thief in the sideboard as opposed to like Narset Parter of Veils.
Mm-hmm.
You're playing like a kind of tempo control deck, so you're trying to do as much on your opponent's turn as possible, or you're just trying to make use of the mana generated from Wilderness Reclamation, so you can like play a big spell plus hold up like 2 counter spells, so it goes through, you know.
Should we move on to lands now, real quick?
Yeah, sure.
I think quickly. So yeah. What we'll really point out is the utility lands is what's important. So yeah. You recently said 2 Blast Zone. I think that's a very cool addition. You've often got the mana if you've got the Wilderness Reclamation to play with those. And, of course, just getting rid of some aggro creatures if they've got a lot of 1 drops.
Yeah, I was going to ask, does that help your matchups against like Mono Black and Red?
Yeah, I'd say so. It allows you to like make the decision to think... it allows you to make the decision, you know, you can maybe get a 2-for-1 on turn 4. Well, you lose one of your lands, but you have like Growth Spirals and Uros to catch you up if you're down a land. It also allows you to, you know, deal with any tricky permanents like at the Resolve Teferi, any creatures that get through your removal, like, I don't know, like a Niv-Mizzet Reborn or something that you can't deal with like Fatal Push and Abrupt Decay. It's just so versatile. And yeah, Wilderness Reclamation just allows you to really take advantage of that. You can also potentially kill Planeswalkers depending on how much mana you have access to with Wilderness Reclamation. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just a really useful utility land. I'm a big fan of it, and playing 29 lands allows you to, you know, get a little bit greedy with colorless sources. I'm also playing like 1 copy of Lumbering Falls. I always feel Lumbering Falls is great. Like, Hexproof is so difficult for decks to deal with in Pioneer. Like, there's not a lot of sacrifice spells getting played, and it can just be very nice to attack then End of Turn, Wilderness, Reclamation, untap the Lumbering Falls, so you still have your mana. It just gives you that extra proactive element to do on your turn, depending on what the matchups you are against. It also can potentially prevent opponents from attacking with creatures as well, knowing that you've got access to a 3/3 hexproof.
I was going to say, why only one? Why not two? It seems like you said, you know, it gets untapped with Wilderness Reclamation. It seems like a really good card to have. You can be aggressive when you need to or be defensive when you need to, and you don't have to worry about, you know, tapping out for mana.
It's just because it comes into the battlefield taps. Like, you need to be careful with how many, you know, you need to have access to untapped mana if you want to cast your spells earlier on. Given that you play 4 Zagoth Triome, 3 Fabled Passage, you know, Lumbering Falls, so you're already playing like 8 lands that are guaranteed to come into play tapped early on. So it's just a balance between, you know, potentially like Castle Vantress as well still comes into play tapped if you don't have another land. Like, you just need to find the balance of how many tapped lands you can play. And I feel like Zagoth Triome is cycling. Having access to cycling is just so important with this deck to prevent you from flooding and, you know, giving you access to card draw plus Castle Vantress activations comes up a lot. So I think one is the number I'm kind of happy with the deck just now.
Okay. Anything else you want to talk about, Kevin? In the lands?
I want to get into the sideboard. That's going to be exciting for me. I know that it's a deck that does get to do a little bit of transformation. You know, when you talked about it last week, you said that it's a deck that does get to have play against pretty much everything in the format. So I'm excited to see what's in your sideboard and kind of what different matchups you're bringing them in for. I might just quick read through what you've got as your current 15. I see 1 Erebos Intervention, 1 Fatal Push, 3 Thoughtseize, 2 Aether Gust, 1 Heartless Act, 1 Negate, 1 Extinction Event, 1 Night Pack Ambusher, 1 Notion Thief, 2 Shadows Verdict, and an Emrakul the Promised End.
So maybe you can...
So, yeah, every aspect of the format almost in there.
Then you just run through how you would use each of them.
Yeah, okay. So Thoughtseize is basically in place of Mystical Dispute. I felt like if people were playing, most of the control matchups would predominantly be Sultai. And if lots of people were playing cards like Thought Distortion and stuff, I'd want to be having access to a more proactive spell in Thoughtseize than Mystical Disputes. So I prefer Thoughtseize overall, because you get punished a lot in this format now for holding on to spells and doing nothing else. Notion Thief is basically for the meta. It's very important. You play a lot of card draw on the deck, so Notion Thief really punishes your opponents. You don't tend to play a lot of removal spells for the card, so it can be game-breaking. Nightpack Ambusher is kind of for like control matchups, forcing your opponent to react on their turn. But it's also there against red decks like Lurus Barn, Mono Red, because given post-board they play Roiling Vortex, Eidolon, you basically want to try and switch gears as fast as possible with your Wilderness Reclamations. So having access to a 4/4 creature that quickly creates a battlefield for you to race your opponent is quite important in that matchup. Negate, kind of self-explanatory, predominantly for control matters. I just prefer hard counter here over than the Mystical Dispute, to be honest. Emrakul the Promised End, well, this is quite an interesting one. Yeah. I seen that Jabberwocky was playing it. His reasoning was it's just one of the best things to do when you're draw going with your opponent. And yeah, Emrakul the Promised End, it's just a nice win con to have access to.
So Uro is always going to be in the graveyard. You're going to have instants in there. You probably lands because you got a lot of cycling. So that's 3.
Yeah. You also have enchantments and Shark Typhoon.
Yeah, you can discard that. So that's like 4, -4. So I'm guessing you'll probably be casting this for like 9 usually.
9 or 10, yeah.
8 or 9.
9 or 10. But that's, I mean, that's normally when you get to the point where you can...
like late game finish it out, right?
Yeah. And I think the last time I cast it was against someone was playing Bant Reclamation. I got to cast it and it worked out that I could go, their hand was like, they had Narset on the battlefield and they had like 2 Dovin's Vetoes and 2 Mystical Disputes. So I attacked their Uro into the Emrakul I think it was another land, played the land. Minus the Narset, found Shark Typhoon. So I got to, like, cast it, cast enchantment, hold priority, Dovin's Veto it, dispute it.
Huh.
So I just got to, like... Hilarious. Yeah, I just got to, like, 5-for-1 them, and I still have the 13-13 on the battlefield, so it's quite nice. It is quite nice, but I'm not convinced...
Would you rather...
Mm-hmm.
I was going to say, would you rather play this than... Is playing Emrakul more satisfying than, like, a Thought Distortion as a way to, like, screw up their hand?
I think so, but the issue with Emrakul is sometimes time can be of the essence, and you end up spending a lot of time deciding what to do with your opponent's turn, because there's so many possibilities with Emrakul. I'm not entirely convinced with it yet, but it has definitely been interesting. It's definitely been impactful and effective, as you'd expect for a 10-mana card, essentially. So Emrakul was kind of for like mid-range to control matchups. The removal is kind of explanatory, like Heartless Act, Fatal Push, Extinction Event, Shadow's Verdicts, Erebos' Interventions, like they're all for predominantly aggro-based matchups. Shadow's Verdict is kind of important for Oops, along with Erebos' Intervention. Erebos' Intervention is a nice utility sideboard card because it can be effective both against aggressive strategies and against Oops, given that Exile up to twice X target cards from an opponent's graveyard means that you can essentially exile their World Spine Worms, which they normally play two of, for 2 mana, and that normally is enough to win the game.
Alright. Oh, anything else, Kevin, or should we move on to our matchups next?
Yeah, let's talk a little bit about matchups. You know, good matchups, bad matchups, matchups you really want to see, matchups you don't. Are there a lot of, you know, like really, really good or really, really bad matchups for the deck?
All the matchups seem pretty close.
I think last time we were saying this is kind of like the Jund of Pioneer, right?
Yeah, it feels kind of like that. Like, basically,
well, I was setting up the expert to explain that, Ryan.
Basically, I would say that Orsha of Auras is quite a good matchup for the deck. The mono green matchup, burn matchup, mono red matchup, mono black matchups are quite close. Niptolite is also pretty close, along with Lotus combo. I guess like decks that would be kind of problematic for the deck would be a Fae of Wishes for Color Omnath strategy. That can be pretty challenging, just because they just have so many threats that are arguably must answer, that it's kind of hard to have the counter spells for all of them. And they can get into a board position where they can go cast a Fairy Time Raveler, bait out the counter spell, and then like resolve like Genesis Ultimatum or Ugin or some really problematic permanent that can go over the top or part the Water Veil. Yeah, part the Water Veil, where they just time warp and just, you know, they get another turn and just finish you off then. So that matchup can be pretty difficult, but it's still fairly close. But I feel slightly unfavored when I'm playing against the Fae of Wishes package of 4-color Omnath. The normal 4-color Omnath deck is normally quite even, if not slightly favorable. It's quite a difficult deck to talk about in terms of matchups, because honestly, like, a lot of them feel very close. Spirits matchup is one that's very good for the deck. Shark Typhoon is just horrendous for Spirits combined with Fatal Push. Gruul midrange is quite a challenging matchup, I guess. Gruul Spellbreaker and stuff like that, Bushwhacker, Burning Tree Emissary, those cards can be problematic at times. Like Esper Control, that matchup is... I think I said it last time, like, it's more dependent on the cards than it is the actual archetypes. Like, anytime someone resolves to Fairy Time Raveler, you're most of the time in a bad spot unless you have the answer for it. The same with like the 4-color Omnath deck, if they get to resolve part of the Water Veil with a board presence, can be difficult. Lotus combo, if they resolve Thought Distortion, can be pretty problematic for you. But those are specific cards than the matchups themselves. Yeah, I think honestly, I think all like most of the matchups are favorable. Most of the matchups are close. Orshov Auras is favorable. Spirits is favorable. Four color Omnath with Fey Wishes is slightly unfavorable. I'd say Lotus combo and Nivtolite would be close, but maybe slightly unfavorable as well. I think like their good draws are slightly better than your good draws.
So I guess we can kind of say that Sultai kind of rewards you for knowing the format, rewards you for being a skillful player. Like you said, it's all in the cards. It can beat any deck. It has the tools to beat any deck, but it needs a pilot that knows how to use those tools correctly. And
yeah,
I mean, would you kind of agree?
Yeah, I would. I'd say like it also depends on the way you've built your list. Like if you need to be in tune on the pulse when it comes to the metagame. You need to know what you're trying to battle. And if you can get it right, it's kind of similar. Like, I speak to Claudio a lot about five-color Niv, and a lot of it comes down to, you know, how you've tuned the list for the weekend. Like, Claudio puts a lot of time into tuning his list with what he thinks will come up.
I think the best thing that Claudio always does with his lists is that he's piloting them, so they end up being the best deck anyways.
Yeah, well, I don't know about that, and I'm kidding. he's playing Fall of Thran in his sideboard, so I don't know what you want to make of that.
Yeah, he's just gonna throw in ham sandwiches, you know, like that, for like the next few weeks. I think. Hey, look, it's great. No, it's just the rest of the deck is good, and it doesn't matter what else you put in that position.
Probably. Exactly, but I like that philosophy because I'm quite similar. Like, I don't think anyone would have. I don't think a lot of players would have tried out cards like Tasigur. Or, you know, cards that I'm playing right now, like pull from tomorrow. Like, I always want to give cards like a second chance because a lot of cards can have their time to shine. And yeah. I think a lot of players don't take the risk or pull the trigger in going with their gut or their intuition with certain cards. And
I really appreciate that. I mean, as a Timmy player, as a Jank player, someone playing cards that not everybody else is playing, I got a lot of respect for that.
Yeah, I appreciate it.
So you had kind of said that, you know, it's not about what deck other people are playing, but about some specific cards. So let me kind of give an example. Let's say that, you know, you're a player, you're going to your FNM once that's a thing again, and you know that there's like two players that are going to take themselves way too seriously. They're going to play Sultai Reclamation because it's the best deck. Or the most popular deck, and you just want to be able to beat the pants off of them. What are some cards that you can throw into your list that just really make the matchup one-sided?
I mean, if you configure a deck list that plays 4 Thought Distortion, 4 Teferi Time Raveler, loads of Thoughtseize, I guess you're onto a winner. Yeah.
All right, so Hand Disruption is a good one.
Yeah. I like Hand Disruption because it always trades down. They can't match it with counter spells. They always have to trade down a mana if they want to protect something in their hand. It allows you to Thoughtseize plus Teferi Time Raveler is horrendous. You know, it's quite hard to deal with that 1-2 punch a lot of the time. So I think on paper like an Esper deck would be Esper Yorion would be quite good, but I just don't think the mana allows it right now. But yeah, maybe like. Just build an Esper Yorion, Esper control deck and hope your mana is kind to you whenever you draw your opening 7.
Well, and that's an interesting thing because, you know, we had Mussy on our show just a few weeks ago, and he kind of said a similar thing to what you were saying when he was talking about Esper, is he was saying that it's a deck that, you know, he compared it to a Jund deck, which for people who don't know, Jund in Modern used to be a deck that was never dominant. It never had like a lot of matchups where it won everything, but against pretty much anything else, it had ways to play. It had ways to show your skill. So it was a 50 to 55% win rate against pretty much everything. So he said that about Esper. You've said this about Sultai now. Is it just all of the decks in Pioneer have play against each other, or are those kind of the, you know, the rocks, the Juns of the format?
I think so. I think it's more to do with the format itself. Like, I think we were having this discussion, and I was talking about how I felt about Pioneer, and I felt that, like, you know, some people say, like, oh, is Pioneer being solved? And I don't think there's anything to solve in the format. Like, it's quite obvious where the power clusters lie in certain color combinations and cards. There's some obvious cards like Uro, you know, Lurus plus efficient burn creatures, etc. Like, there's obvious, you know, Mono Green Devotion. It's obvious where the power lies in certain cards, Omnath as well. It's more to do with a lot of the decks are just quite evenly matched. So I think it's more to do with the format. I don't think it's the exception may be like Spirits against Lotus combo. Like, Spirits is so heavily favored in that matchup. And I guess Spirits is quite unfavored against control decks with Shark Typhoon plus Fatal Push, I guess.
Oh yeah, that's tough. Shark Typhoon, Supreme Verdict.
Yeah, exactly. So I think it's more to do with the format than any individual deck in the format. So like most of the formats is quite close. Like, I think like Wilderness Reclamation is the most played deck, but I don't think it's necessarily the best deck. I just think people like that kind of strategy more than anything. But yeah, like any of the top like eight decks in the format, or the top 10 even, have a right to be there, you know?
All right, I got one other one, is that, you know, you play Shark Typhoon, there's like the Teemer Reclamations which play Shark Typhoon, there's the Esper Control that plays Shark Typhoon. What's the best deck that really shows off the power of Shark Typhoon in the format?
Oh, it's definitely the Reclamation decks.
Okay.
The Reclamation decks, because you have the capability of making huge sharks turn 5 against the red decks. You have the capability of being able to resolve Shark Typhoon enchantments plus untap your lands end of turn to get immediate action from it. So I think that...
Ooh, there's the Fires deck too. Those ones also can play an untapped hard cast, but...
Yeah, I mean, the Fires decks can do it, but they're mainly doing... creating the shark as a way to bring down a Lurus target token.
That's true.
But I don't think they do anything... I don't think, as far as the card itself, and I don't think they have the same ability of pivoting between big shark token enchantment the same way that the Wilderness Reclamation deck does. And I don't think the Jeskai Lucar deck has been played a lot at the moment anyway. So I think Wilderness Reclamation... Basically, the Sultai Wilderness Reclamation deck almost exists on the back of Shark Typhoon, because okay. It can use it so effectively.
All right. So, any other last-minute tips? Any suggestions for anyone who's picking up the deck soon?
All I'd say is that do some research, take your time, getting to grips with the deck. You know, don't be afraid.
Practice.
Yeah, practice. Don't be afraid to mulligan. Really think about everything you can do with a Shark Typhoon. As I said earlier, like, you can cycle it for zero if you need to. You need a revolt trigger in a pinch with Fatal Push. Just really think about what your role is in any matchup, and. Yeah, have fun with it. But yeah, I would definitely recommend getting a lot of reps in before you pick it up and play any tournament, because it isn't the easiest deck to pilot at first. It takes a little bit of time.
All right,
sounds good. What do you got, Ryan?
Last part then. I think we talked about this last time, about Kaldheim and how this is going to affect Sultai, when the new format starts. So we had a lot of new cards spoiled since the last time we talked about this, last week. How is Kaldheim going to affect your deck, you think? For example, like the snow permanents now, or the pathways, or we have some new counter spells like Annul and stuff like that. So do you see anything making an effect, you know, like foretell or anything like that in Sultai.
Yeah, and let me just quick preface that we are going to have a full spoiler set review in a week,
2 weeks.
I think.
Yeah, a week, yeah.
Yeah, a couple weeks once we've got the full set out, but, you know, we're not going to have Martin on in that for this, so we want to get his opinion now. Go ahead, and then I'll jump back in.
Yeah.
Yeah, sure. I think the Saw It Coming foretell counterspell is quite interesting. Foretell, the mechanic in general, is something I'm really interested in to see how it pans out. But I think with, like, given that foretell is just on your turn, it doesn't matter. It doesn't say it has to be at any given step. So you can, like, use all the mana with Wilderness Reclamation, untap, and then foretell a bunch of cards. So you can make your counter spells, like, more efficient. You can, you know, there's that Glimmer of Genius foretell draw spell that looks really nice. Yeah, like, I think the Wilderness Reclamation deck can generally take advantage of it. I believe Annul is already in Pioneer. I don't think that's a new one.
Oh, yeah, it might have been actually.
Yeah, I think it was in the last Theros.
Yeah.
Block. Yeah. I thought it was like in the Scars block for some reason, but.
No, it's. I think it was in, yeah, Theros. I'm pretty sure it was.
Like Journey into Nyx or something, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. In general, I don't think I'm great at evaluating cards before they come out. Like, obviously, cards like Uro were kind of obviously going to be very powerful. I don't see anything major
that would affect. Nothing scares you or excites you.
I don't know. Because there's cards like Showdown of the Scalds could be interesting. I don't know if that gives like Boros, like another mid range sideboard targets. Some of the sagas are quite interesting, but I have no idea how they'll play out, to be honest. What about you guys? Is anything you like?
Yeah, I think with you especially, you know, foretell is really where I'm looking to see if any of those are good. You know, I tweeted you out when I saw that Cosmos Charger because I think that's like almost there. I feel like, you know, the draw spell's good, the counter spell's fine. Like, they would be basically 1-to-1 replacements or things that's already in the deck.
Yeah.
If there's another incentive, so like what I'm hoping is maybe like the blue. Oh, I guess it would be. Yeah, I don't know if it'd be in the right colors, but if there's like a spell land that helps out with foretell cards or something like that,
yeah.
That might be enough to like push it over. It needs like one more thing that would be free to play.
Yeah, exactly. I guess there's another card that got spoiled today, this Starnheim Unleashed, the angel card.
Yeah, that's cool.
That card looks insane, potentially. I don't know, maybe blue-white control gets better. I don't know, like, I just feel like I just hope they spoil some insane one mana white removal spell, you know?
Oh god, please.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
It's
like
garbage. It's all garbage.
No, I know, the one they spoiled today was on was it today? I don't know, but it's just
yesterday. Yeah, I mean, at least for me it was yesterday. I don't know about your guys' time zones.
The card I'm most excited about is the Turgrid God of Fright. Because whenever an opponent sacrifices or discards a permanent card, you put that into the battlefield under your card, or under your control.
Yeah.
So I'm going to play that in my Waste Not deck and just say, okay, discard your Uro, I get it. Discard your Planeswalker, I get it.
Yeah.
It's basically it that betrays at 5 mana.
Yeah, I'll be boring and say something like the Old Growth Troll, but we'll do a full set review some later week.
Yeah, sounds right. Good.
Glad to get your opinion on that. So we're going to wrap up our show here. Thank you so much for joining us. This is, you know, we went through the second time. I think we almost talked more on some topics. Maybe I knew where to guide you to get the best answers, but really enjoyed doing this. I've really enjoyed doing the series with our various guests, having them on to really share their expertise on specific decks in the format to keep you guys up to date with what's interesting in Pioneer. If you want to be updated on this, on new spoilers, on any hot takes, anything magic related to Pioneer, the best place is to follow myself and Ryan at MTG Pioneer on Twitter. You can also find from there a link to our Discord, which is where you can go and see the deck lists we discussed in this show, as well as, you know, just talk to us. It's a great place to converse with other people who care about Pioneer.
Yeah, we have a lot of discussion going on right now about spoilers and what we're excited about, so definitely jump on in and, you know, join the conversation. And of course, if you want to contact me on Twitter, it's at Yoshwenky, which is Yoschwenky. And Martin, how about you? You want to drop some lines, drop some promotions?
Yeah, let's go for it. So Yeah, you can, if you like my content whenever I'm on the podcast, feel free to check me out on my Twitter, Harry13SCO. So Harry13SierraCharlieOscar. And the same handle, except twitch.tv/Harry13SEO, where you can come watch me live stream Pioneer content. Sometimes I play other formats, but if Pioneer is your main thing, then I'll be streaming multiple times a week, and Pioneer a good amount of the time. So yeah, it'd be great to have you on board, and you can check me out there.
We'll try to retweet you when you do that as well.
Yeah, no, I appreciate it, guys. Thanks a lot.
All right, thank you one more time for coming out of the show. This is the end of our show. Thank you guys for listening. We look forward to being your go-to source for Pioneer information online. First Pioneers are signing off.